Good?
Bad.
WTF. Well, I'm
thinking.
Welcome back to episode 69 of The Good, The Bad, and The WTF. Where they thinking? And June is nearly over.
Yes.
We're coming into July.
Yes.
How's your June been, Peter? This is the last episode of June.
It's been lovely weather. I've enjoyed the sunshine. A little bit colder today, but it's still nice out, I think. It's that kind of deceptive weather.
Yeah, it's kind of chilly. It's kind of chilly. But I'm happy. I'm happy with the weather. But we don't talk about the weather on this. We talk about movies. So
the
Elvis came out
movies.
On Friday. Yeah. We spoke a little bit about Elvis already. Are you going to go and see it? I've heard good things.
Yeah, so I'll probably go and see it. I think next week I'm going to see Top Gun Maverick. I'm going to try and...
Another movie that... people have told me this is the best movie of the year. That's what people have
told
me.
I have heard a lot of good things about it. So I am kind of curious. It seems to bring back the nostalgia of it all. Lightyear came out, which apparently got bad reviews.
Are we surprised by that?
I wasn't sure on it. There was a lot of red flags for me. For example... It feels completely different from Toy Story. It feels more like... Do you remember the Buzz Lightyear Star Command TV show? It felt like
yes,
it was being there.
I do remember.
And I think the other problem is Chris Evans. Chris Evans... I like Chris Evans. I think he's an all right actor, actually. But, you know, Tim Allen's voice... is Buzz Lightyear, in my opinion. It's hard to deviate from that. You know, that voice is Buzz Lightyear. That anyone else kind of just feels weird.
It's a tough act to follow.
It feels like you're cheating on your girlfriend, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. It doesn't seem right. I'll be honest. I'm always against these type of movies anyway.
Yeah.
Like a spin-off of. Well, just like an origin story of Buzz. I didn't want it. Do we get an origin story of
he's
Woody?
He's a toy. I don't understand. He's a toy. So his origin story is something that doesn't exist. So it's hard to really... I mean, the origin story of Buzz is Toy Story. That's
exactly.
The origin story right there. And it is weird for them to do this.
It's a cash grab. It's definitely a cash
Absolutely.
Grab. But I'm probably not going to see this movie. If
it comes
honest.
On Disney Plus, I might like give it a gamble one day.
I'm surprised by the budget as well. The budget is $200 million.
A lot of that is probably Chris Evans' paycheck.
Yeah, what am I paying him for that?
$198 million.
It's animation.
Animation costs a lot, though. I mean, remember Mars Needs Mums was an expensive movie.
How much is Mars Needs Mums again? That was... You don't remember.
I thought you were actually looking it up. That's why...
I'll look it up now. What I was looking up was... it was $150 million. What I was looking up was the budget on Toy Story 4, the latest Toy Story, which came in at $200 million as well. But it obviously brought back... $1 billion in the box office, but that's a big...
It's a lot of special effects there.
It's Toy Story.
I mean, there's a lot of animators. I don't know how many animators it takes to make a movie of Toy Story size. I imagine there's a hefty bunch. A lot of actors, a lot of big actors. I don't know who's in the... Apart from Chris Evans, I don't know who is in this Lightyear movie.
Well, I mean, the budget being $200 million, it puts it within the top three... animated movies ever. Obviously, the two most expensive animated movies were Tangled.
Yeah.
And The Lion King.
What, the 1994?
It says a 2019 musical drama.
Which,
did you ever watch that one?
Yeah, I had. I'm glad that they call it animated because I hate when they call that live action. There's nothing live action about
that. It's gone down. It comes in as animated. And then in three, you've got the next below that is 200 million, which is Toy Story 4, obviously Buzz, or Lightyear. Why don't they call it Buzz? I prefer Buzz. Incredibles 2, Finding Dory, Monsters University, Cars 2, and Toy Story 3. So it comes in quite high. So that needs a big return for its success. And as it stands, it's only 50% of the way there. I feel like it will hit over 200 million, but I think they were hoping for a billion.
Don't know.
When you spend that sort of money.
I don't know.
Well, the returns on all of these movies is good.
I believe it's not getting a China release, isn't it? Because they won't cut I believe there is a same-sex kiss scene in Lightyear, and I believe they won't cut that, so China are refusing to show it, I believe.
Fucking hell. Some countries. Why are they in the dark ages? What is going on there? That is crazy, though, isn't it?
It is odd. It's like they're cartoons, for one thing.
Exactly. That's ridiculous. But yeah, so it goes in the top three most expensive animated movies ever. So we'll see. This could potentially be down as a massive flop, and would be actually maybe the biggest flop out of all of these movies in the top.
We should look at that, especially now that the cinemas are starting to open. At the end of the year, we should look at what was the biggest grosser movies of this year and what was the biggest flops.
We should. That'll be an end of the year podcast, 100%. Oh, yeah. We should do that over Christmas.
And if we're seeing them, we can even talk about them.
We can. I watched two things this week. One was a throwback because it was on TV on Thursday. Yeah. And the other was something I stumbled across on Disney Plus. I'll start with the throwback. Football Factory was on Channel 5 on Thursday night. And I've not seen that movie for so long. If people aren't familiar with it, it is the, football hooligan movie starring Danny Dyer. And obviously it's centered around the Chelsea firm, and basically their life choices in terms of why they do hooliganism. And do they glorify hooliganism? Definitely not. But this is a great movie. In terms of all of the hooligan movies, this is, I think, my favourite.
And that was the kind of decade where a lot of hooligan movies were out. I remember Green Street, and there were a few others that were just like, I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was because of Football Factory or if it was something else, but there felt like a lot of hooligan movies then.
And it gave us Neil Maskell as well.
Yeah.
Who probably, if you look at the cast in that movie, I would say probably went on to be the most respected in the industry.
Most diverse,
in terms of what he did.
Definitely most diverse. He's
maybe most diverse. Maybe that's more fair. But the rest did movies like St. George's Day, Silent Night.
Two of them did City Rats movies.
Yeah, they do. We do. They said about that, but they kind of stayed in that geezer. British gritty action drama films,
and Danny Dyer's still doing it in that game show that he hosts that I can't remember the name of.
Yeah,
that gone. Slags.
He's probably gone on to be the most successful in terms of making money and being a household name. But Neil Maskell's probably come out at the best. And he, to be fair, he was probably the best in the movie as well. His acting was definitely levels above a lot of people in this movie.
The one that always stands out for me is the main bad guy. I don't know his name.
Billy Bright, Frank Harper. Billy and Tamer Hassan was in it as well. Them two in the movie feel like two heavyweights of geezer movies coming up against each other. So and to be fair, after watching it back, I enjoyed it again. I really did.
They are like if you met your girlfriend's father and that was them, you would leave. You would be scared. You would go, I'm gay. I'm going to leave.
I just realized
I'm gay. It only took me pissing my pants to find that out.
So I watched that one, and that was good. And the second thing I watched was on Disney Plus called XFL. Or this was XFL.
Oh, the McMahon one. The failed, yes. Well, I've never seen it, but I've got the, obviously, the McMahon DVD, and they go through the failure of XFL.
It is fascinating. I cannot believe it. It is so good, the story of XFL.
I'd like to see that.
It is so Vince McMahon.
I'd like to see that.
It's really good. It's on Disney Plus. I enjoyed it. Obviously, XFL came back, didn't it, for 2020. But the season was cut in half because of COVID. They kind of went into bankruptcy. But then Dwayne Johnson and I can't remember who else brought it. It's Dwayne Johnson and Danny Garcia.
Right.
Redbird Capital now own the XFL. So it's kind of cool how Dwayne Johnson owns it when it was Vince McMahon who sort of founded it. But that story is brilliant.
I don't understand how they thought that could work. I mean, for me, it's the same like if someone suddenly made a second premiership. Like the NFL is so established, all the teams are so established that to create a new league, you're already on the losing foot. It's like someone made the super premiership and said, this is the super premiership. Watch this. It's like, yeah, but my team's Chelsea. I know all the players from this. You're like, it's hard for me to get invested in something which is totally brand new. It's hard. It is really difficult. There's too much history.
It is difficult. Because sport is based solely on history. You support where you grew up. You support what your parents supported. You know, what you kind of born. You're kind of born into sports, yeah. Aren't you, sometimes? You don't really have the choice. You're brought into the world and they're like, you fucking like sports. And you support this team.
It's like being left-handed or right-handed. You know, God gives you that. It gives you...
So it is difficult. But the problem with XFL was it was too stupid for the American football fans, but not crazy enough for the WWE fans. So it kind of had that weird mixture.
I mean, what happened?
Kind of,
did they just like do suplexes and Stolcomb stunners and all that stuff?
Well, it was meant to be like the fun version of the NFL. They kind of had all these rules... no fair catches, stuff like that, just so it was a bit more aggressive. But then obviously the quality of the football wasn't as good because these were all people that couldn't make the NFL. Yeah. So they weren't, the quality was a step down. It was a complete step down.
Exactly. But they're not anyone, unless the pay packet is huge, which is even more of a gamble for them to do it. No one's going to turn down the NFL for the XFL, are they?
No, I don't know if anyone did. I don't know if anyone ever did that. I don't think they went into it. But the way they worked with pay as well is if you got paid more if you win. So it was kind of like, in a way, because the NFL is different. People just get paid a ridiculous amount of money no matter what. In this, it was like if you win, you get more money. Like the individually, you get more money. So there was an incentive there to actually, you know, make it as competitive as humanly possible. It had elements. The problem with it was they overpromised and underdelivered, and I think they rushed into it as well. They had two exhibition games and they started the season, so a lot of these players had never played together, and suddenly they were thrusted into trying to play something that was valuable, like worthy of being on TV on a Saturday night. But they really go into it. It's funny, and it's so Vince McMahon.
The only bit I remember from the documentary I watched about it was that they didn't let it be its own thing. They kept bringing in wrestlers to promote it, and they wouldn't just let... And maybe that's another problem. They just wouldn't let it be its own thing. So it's like they didn't even have enough confidence in the product itself.
Now, I think Vince went back into his comfort zone and was like, I can rely on these people to bring it in. Some of the things they did were great, though, because they had... They sort of introduced, you know, the spider cam we have in football. Yeah. They introduced like the sky cam, so it would follow the footage, because the way they wanted it to be is like you could watch the game like when you play a video game and you had the same view, which is over the top.
All right.
So they brought that in, which the NFL incorporated, and they had stuff like players being mic'd up, which is something the NFL has incorporated recently. The craziest thing, which the NFL hasn't done for obvious reasons, is they had people with steady cams on the field of play during play, running with the players, capturing like as close to the action as they humanly could. They called it Bubba Cam. They called it Bubba Cam because Bubba was a filmer for the WWE, and it was Vince's idea was to get people in there. And obviously, the camera guy who he asked to do it said, you're going to have to pay me a lot more to do that because it's an element of risk. And then Vince was like, Bubba will do it. And he went to Bubba, and Bubba said no.
Why didn't he ever incorporate that into wrestling?
He did. They always had that action. You know, when Bubba was the filmer who always took the most risks. That's why he asked Bubba if he wanted to do that. Bubba obviously said no because he thought even that was too crazy. But with WWE, he would be as close to the action as possible. He would be a risk taker in terms of his cameraman. That's why they called it Bubba Cam, but Bubba never stepped foot on the field with a camera. And obviously, they had to go with the sex appeal as well, the cheerleaders. They had everything that Vince McMahon, you know, has his ingredients for success. It was the Vince McMahon starter pack, but it went wrong. But it's the same with the commentators. They brought in Jim Ross. They brought in Jerry, the King Lawyer. You know, it was basically like WWE does NFL. Yeah.
It feels like a gimmick, doesn't it? Too much of a gimmick.
But it was funny hearing Jim Ross do the commentary for it. It was quite funny. But it's a good documentary because it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
I'll definitely have to give that a go.
No, yeah, it's good. I highly recommend it. But that's all I watched. Do we want to get into the main event?
Let's go for it.
This week, we're going to take a journey into the mind of a different kind of person. A director by the name of Jim Wynorski. And this week we watched the movie Chopping Mall, which came out in 1986. And basically this movie is about three security robots who turn... Basically, they malfunction, they become evil, and they start attacking these teenagers who are employees of the mall, who stayed inside the mall after dark to party and do teenage things. This movie is available on Shudder. What did you think of this? Did you expect
very
80s? Very 80s. I loved how it was.
It was almost like Stranger Things. Like it was that 80s. Like, Stranger Things is the most 80s thing I've ever seen, and this is second. I love these shopping malls, and I kind of wish they kind of existed. Like, we never had that shopping mall experience. Like, I remember as a kid, you had like shopping malls, and you had like the upstairs, you had like the practical jokes store, and you know, I missed them shopping malls. And this movie kind of made me. I spent most of the time looking at the names of all the stores. I was like, oh, what could that store be? What was this store? And of course, it's a famous store. They used it in Commando. They filmed during the times when the store was closed, which I like. I was fascinated with this movie with the filmmaking process. I was really glued into this kind of process of how they were doing it. Just imagine how much fun it is. They're just running around the store at night with guns. The poster, it's a typical 80s, we make the poster and then we'll think of what the story is afterwards. And it's like Jim Wynorski watched Short Circuit and said, if only he killed people. Hang on, I could do that movie. And he did. And I think it's fun. I'd watch it more. I feel like it loses its way at the end a little bit. I like how the robots kill by couple. Like, if one of the couples dies, the second one to die will be the second half of the couple. They're very, like, they're very organized robots. They're the cheapest looking robots I've ever seen. And where did they get these laser eyes from? This is one thing I couldn't understand, because why would they have laser eyes?
Yeah, I don't know. They seem to have a bit too many like gizmos and gadgets inside of them to potentially kill people, which is kind of strange, because I thought the main mission of stopping people from robbing the store would have been maybe to just, you know, taser them. Like just render them a little bit like, I don't know,
like a net or something,
not
like
dead.
Throw a net on them.
Yeah, nothing to kill them. So. So I didn't really understand the idea there of protecting them all. And it was also clearly, I mean, the story is stupid, but it's like, how do we make these robots evil? A lightning strike. No.
And what I don't understand about the robots, the other thing I don't have to say about the robots is the first kill, why did they hide the body? I didn't understand.
That was weird. And it hid behind doors as well. Yeah. Didn't hide the body very well. I don't know how she didn't even see it. There was just a leg poking out.
Like the first two kills, they do it creepily. And then like, the rest of the time, they're just going around killing people. Why were they so sneaky around the guards? Why did they think, like, we have to kill these? Because surely in their mind, they've just gone haywire. So all they're thinking is intruders. So why are they being sneaky and hiding bodies? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
It was a bit weird. It was almost like they did that and then they thought, we can't really keep this up for the whole movie, so we'll just get a bit chaotic for the rest of the movie. Because that was strange. But let's go to the first death then. Yeah. The first death being the guy who chews gum in maybe every single scene he's in. But it kind of suits like him, but he's a douchebag. He's a douchebag.
He could have been a yuppie in Wall Street.
Yeah, he's just got one of those faces, hasn't he? Like, he's just annoying looking guy. I don't really know what he went on to do. He seems to be a director now. Okay, interesting. He's directed an episode of The Blacklist, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, CSI. Everyone who ever worked in America has worked on CSI in some shape or form. But yeah, this death was funny. It's a typical teenage death. He has sex, and then they go out to get some cigarettes. So he goes to get retrieve some cigarettes, and then he ends up dying. It's kind of like every horror movie ever, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Never have sex in a horror movie.
Don't have sex
because you will die.
Lesson: never have sex in a horror movie, and never chew gum. No one who chews gum in a movie survives.
Be a virgin and innocent.
Be a dorky
and
virgin.
May survive the movie. Yeah. Which is kind of how this one goes. But as with most Jim Wynorski movies, we had boobs.
We did.
We had boobs. Jim Wynorski is known for this. This seems to be his trademark.
He's not known for his boob, but he's known for showing boobs. Not his own boob. Well, he might show. We don't know what he does.
he might do but then Susie Slater, who plays Leslie, goes after him to find him, and then it's a typical shot of her walking through the mall, typical sort of she's gonna die sort of shot. You can just see it covered a mile off. But she gets done dirty in this movie. I think the way no one else dies in this manner. They just think, fuck it, bang, they spend a lot of budget on it, on an exploding head. And they're like, bang. And then it caught me off guard. I was like, fucking hell, when that happened. I did not expect that. And then that kind of set the tone. I thought, oh, we're going to get loads of limbs and blood and everything in this. I mean, we just didn't after that.
No, it was very tame.
That was it. One exploding head.
It might have been like maybe the MPAA might have just came in and said, look, you can have one exploding head and that's it. And they went, all right, we better not waste this exploding head and we use it on the right girl.
It's gonna be Susie. Boom. We've seen your boobs now. Time for your head to explode. That's what Jim Wynorski said. And yeah, then the rest of the movie is kind of just. I mean, there is a good. There's the scene when they come to the furniture store where they're all staying, and they blow down the doors and they start firing lasers everywhere. And they're jumping around avoiding it. Oh, that scene was quite good. It was complete chaos. And I was sort of thinking, how has anyone not been hit here in this scene? Because there's no way they're dodging it like that. So it was a bit stupid, but it was good.
It turned into like a survival thing. I mean, some of the things I questioned, like how did they know there were three robots?
Yeah, how did they?
Suddenly they found one robot was killing them, and suddenly they became like robot experts. And they knew everything, how to dodge these robots.
Ooh, maybe it's because they worked in the store. Obviously, they would have been told to show it their ID. So they would have had some knowledge of the robots.
They don't know there was three of them, though, do they?
They might have.
But
They might have. There was that presentation at the start. I don't know if they had had presentations similar to when the robots maybe started. I imagine they would have had to have a little safety course on the robots. You don't just introduce three robots into the store when you're working there and be like, what the fuck is this?
You know, they failed their safety course because they did not react well to murdering robots.
Well, they did all they could. They show it their ID, which was the main thing. If you show it your ID, then it won't kill you. But it did, because it malfunctioned. There was one scene that was really good. We'll just backtrack a bit. When the first death of the movie, when... I don't know what he is. What would he be called? Just like the guy who was just in the room with the robots.
I thought he was the surveillance. What is he? He was the
technician.
I thought he was just like the night surveillance.
Maybe he was night surveillance. I thought he was like a robot technician or something. When he turns his back on the robots and the robots are like slowly, that one robot slowly like working its way up to kill it, and like things are, the little shutter comes up, comes down, and it's turning its head. And I like that scene. That scene was good. But also, how the hell did he not know that they'd turned on? Because they were making noises.
Yeah, they're a bit too loud for like to be completely.
Very loud, and he just wasn't. He wasn't that suspicious. And we were, but also
he was looking at boobs, so you know, he was very distracted at the time.
He was looking at boobs. But then we did have a second death before we had the death of the two teenagers, and we were introduced again to an old pal, that guy Dick Miller.
I thought that was the third death.
No, I think that's the second.
No, because then the other night clerk guy comes in, doesn't he, and he gets killed when he says, "Oh, sorry, I was late," blah blah blah. And that's when they hide the body.
The
third one. Yeah, Dick Miller. Because this is a Roger Corman production. Roger Corman and Dick Miller obviously go way back. And yeah, it's a nice little cameo. I like seeing Dick Miller in a movie. Even if it's poor CGI that kills him.
It wasn't the best, but we respect it. Nonetheless, I didn't know who was in this movie. I didn't actually look at the credits before I got into it, so I was surprised to see him. But it was good to see him, even if it was only briefly.
And I think he was playing the same character he played in A Bucket of Blood, I believe.
Yeah, there was a few like omens to like Roger Corman in this movie. We know Jim Wynorski is a massive Roger Corman fan. And he had a lot of omens to him. There was a lot of posters on the wall as well, weren't they? Were they Roger Corman movies, I think?
There's a lot of nods to Roger Corman, like Roger's Little Shop of Pets, obviously, is a Little Shop of Horrors. There was Peckinpah Sporting Goods, which is obviously Sam Peckinpah.
Yeah.
I mean, he has said that he learnt more from Roger Corman than what he learned at film school. In an hour with Roger Corman, he learned so much. And Roger Corman is like one of the great... I personally think Roger Corman should be talked in the same breath as like Bruckheimer and Spielberg, because I think he's that important to cinema. It's just a different cinema. The low budget stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, very, very low budget stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, there's
He's still alive and kicking as well. The man's 96 and he's still going. He's still active as well, isn't he? He's still working in the business at 96 years.
He knows how to make make movies on the cheap and get money for them. And this is exactly what this kind of movie is.
And it's exactly what our man Jim Wynorski does. This movie was obviously made in 22 days. And it was his second movie he directed, wasn't it? And then snowballed?
Yeah,
snowballed. Kind of snowballed from there, his career. I think after meeting Roger Corman, that was a pretty big moment for him as a big movie nut that he is. And then he went on to make a lot of movies. He made more movies than Scorsese, and he made some questionable movies as well.
He kept himself busy.
Should we get into the career? Should we get into the career of Jim Wynorski?
Yeah, go for it.
So Jim Wynorski is... I see conflicting things about him. I watched a recent interview with Jim Wynorski, and he seems a lot more settled down in the last couple of years. This was probably about... Maybe it was like 3 years old, the interview I listened to. He seemed a lot more settled as a person, a lot more chilled out. But there is a documentary out, which is called... This came out in 2009, which is called Papatopoulos. And it is about how he makes a movie in 3 days, which is called The Witches of Brestwick, or whatever it's called, something like that. And it's kind of, it follows him on set. And he is not a nice guy to be on set with. He is very particular. He is very rude, very upfront. And he kind of just says it how it is.
So a normal director, basically.
He's a normal director, but he is quite funny with how he does it, and he's kind of like, it's kind of like a thing where I watched the late drive-in show with Jim, and they spoke about this, and they had on Kelly Maroney.
Yeah,
no, not Kelly. Was it Kelly Maroney they had on? Yeah, they had on Kelly Maroney. No, they didn't. It was someone else.
Barbara Crampton.
Was it Kelly Maroney? No, it was Kelly Maroney. It wasn't Barbara Crampton. Sorry, it was Kelly Maroney. They had her on, and she said it's part of the brand, right? Because Wynorski claims that he slept with every female lead in his films. I don't know if I believe him.
Was he like Gene Simmons? He's like, I slept with 1,000 women.
Yeah, he claims he slept with every female lead in his films. There's a bit where he's in the documentary where he's going through, he's doing his house tour, and it is quite funny because he doesn't have a wife. I don't know if he's ever been married. I don't know if he has kids or anything like that. He just seems to be single.
The amount of the movies he's made, it's hard to imagine that he has a life at all. It just looks like he jumps from job to job.
He does, but he does it quick, doesn't he? He can write a script overnight. I mean, I think this script was
pretty... Let's be honest, I don't think the Witches of Brestwick is a completely hard script. I can imagine that it's pretty easy to follow.
Hey, don't be so facetious. You don't know that. His house tour is funny because you go in his kitchen, and in his cupboards, you know, you normally have like spices, you have like pasta. In his cupboards, Boobs. He just has films. He just has films tips. And books. Just films and books. I don't know what is going on there. And all around his house, he has all the posters on his wall of the movies that he's made. And he was going through the movies, and there was one movie that he points at, and he goes, I can't remember what movie it was. I wish I could remember this. There's so many fucking movies that he's done. But he points at the movie, and he says the name of the woman who starred in it, and he goes, hate her. Apparently, he's fallen out with a lot of people. He also credits himself for discovering Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah, I heard
that.
She
denies.
I heard the first time that he saw her naked, and he wished that he could have done that or something like that.
Yeah, he wished that he would have had her boobs in his movie at some point, because he thought it would have made it really successful.
It's the same with Kelly Maroney. He cast her because he wanted to date her.
Yeah, he fancied her. Yeah, yeah. That was literally it. He cast her because he wanted to date her. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, but they all do it. I mean, Harvey Weinstein is a prime example of guys who are in powerful positions think that they can, you know, do anything. And I suppose he thought he could. I don't know the guy. I'm only speculating through Harvey Weinstein. It might be harsh to judge him next to Harvey Weinstein.
I think it probably is, because I don't think Jim Wynorski is in that kind of way. I haven't read anything that claims that he is or says that he is. And I feel like something would have come out by now.
I'm not saying that he has abused his power, but I think when you're powerful and when people want to be in your movies, maybe, you know, they're a lot nicer to you. Maybe they give you hints that things could happen and you feel a little bit more powerful. I think any guy would probably, it would go to your head if you had that power. We wouldn't know. We don't have anything to give.
Yeah, true. Very true. But no, I think Jim is more of a brand thing for him. But it is funny. It's interesting what he's done with his career and how he's how all of these movies he's made. Because if you go through the movies that he's made, there's 100% you have been in a video store and you have come across these weird movies and been like, what the fuck is that? And wanted to watch it.
There's a few on Amazon Prime. Like, there's one called Gila, which I have added to my Amazon Prime. So I will watch it eventually.
Gila.
It's just a TV movie about a giant lizard.
Is it a Wynorski? Yeah. It is a Wynorski. It makes it sound like it's like a painting or something. Is that a Wynorski? Is that
an original Wynorski? How much is it going for? $5?
He just has things that are very intriguing to the eye. Especially if you're a kid and you want to watch something stupid.
He's a sci-fi. Piranaconda. He's a sci-fi director. Like you would go on sci-fi and you'd find a Wynorski. Nothing wrong with it. I mean, if he's got a brand and it works for him, I mean, you got to pay the bills. Not everyone could be a Kubrick. You have to do your own little thing. And when you were going on about Wynorski, it did put me into the idea of other guys like this that I would love to talk about and to go through. Like these kind of...
Go on.
I don't know what you would call Wynorski, and I think I would call him more... of a I forgot the word for it. I had it and now it's gone. Exploitation director. I don't think of him as a horror director. I think he's more of an exploitation. And I thought of a couple of directors who are the same. Child's Band, because I've been watching Shudder recently, because obviously got 7 days, so I've been trying to like find all of these like movies I've never seen or wanted to rewatch. And three of them I watched actually. Three interesting directors, stroke producers, stroke production teams, which are kind of the same as Wynorski. It kind of made me think about that, this kind of exploitation genre, which is very interesting genre. It's it is kind of a little bit taboo, some of this stuff. Like it feels like you shouldn't watch it, but you still watch it because it's fascinating, and you know it's crap as well. And that's the other fascinating thing. And like I said, Chuck...
Yeah, you're almost like intrigued to see where it goes. I mean, speaking on Charles Band, the movie Ginger Dead Man versus Evil Bong.
He did so many Evil Bong movies. And like the movie I watched was one that he produced, which was Tourist Trap, which is like a really good movie. But then he made like a movie a couple of years ago called Corona Zombies. You know, and it's just like, that is like, trying to grab onto what is the nearest thing you can do. And I bet those movies took like 20 days to make, 3 days to write.
Oh, 100%.
Another director is a guy called, one I'd love to do a ranking episode of is Frank Henenlotter. I recently watched Frankenhooker for the third time, Frankenhooker. First time I watched it, I wasn't sure what I thought of it. Second time, I liked it. This time, I loved it. And I like his movies. You might remember Basket Case.
I do remember Basket Case.
I always remember this, and this is a great story, is when I was watching either Basket Case 2 or Basket Case 3, and you came on into the room during the sex scene, and you looked at me and you said, "What the hell are you watching?" And it kind of summed up.
Well, I can't remember the sex scene.
It was the Siamese twin. I can't remember his name. And he was having sex with another mutant. So it's like mutant sex.
And
you said, "What the hell are you watching?" And again, he's an exploitation. He hasn't got like a long career compared to Wynorski. I think he's only made like 7 movies. But they're so out there, they probably don't make money. It's probably why it's hard for him. And obviously, Troma is another one. I watched Cannibal the Musical, which Troma released. And Lloyd Kaufman is, again, like a trademark, like Wynorski. Lloyd Kaufman is almost like a character in himself. I don't know how true the real man is to the persona that you see. But it is... I like this exploitation kind of genre. And I think Choppermore is definitely... It fits nicely into that 80s scene because especially I think the 80s was the most creative time for horror movies. Like you had so many different kind of weird and wacky movies, and they were always like, if they weren't horror comedies, they were light horrors, or they were gory dark horrors, you know, that, but they always had a little bit of a playfulness to them. And this is a playful movie.
Yeah, I think they're like they really are a product of the 80s, aren't they? Like, they really, really are.
Yeah, and I don't think they'd ever... I mean, they tried to, but I think it's peaked. Like, this playful horror stuff, it peaked in the 80s, and I don't think they've ever really gone back to it, because I think the idea is it just feels so nostalgic. Like, the whole... The opener of the shopping mall scene, like, that little bit is just, like... it. Breathe life into it, like, this is the shopping mall. I only wish, if I had, and they probably couldn't afford it, I wish that the robots were, they went, you know, they went sort of dysfunctional when everyone was in the store instead of just like six teens. I like the idea of everyone being in the store being killed by the robots. Maybe I'm a sick, twisted bastard, but I think that's more interesting.
Maybe the budget couldn't probably stretch that far. Also, like, teenagers in horror movies, everyone wants to see them die, don't they? They really do.
It's very cliche. It's always, they've got to be teenagers and they've got to be horny. And they all have sex near each other. I mean, they are. It's like a Roman orgy.
Yeah. That was kind of strange. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think a lot of these movies, like, they really work. This movie really works for the 80s, but you couldn't do Chopping Mall now. And make it look like, and have it look bad, but also look fine.
I heard that they did want to remake this, but they didn't go to Winorski about it. But they wanted, instead of killer robots, to be killer mannequins, which makes you wonder why the fuck.
It's not chopping.
Yeah, why
more,
the fuck
it?
Remake something which is nothing like it just for the name?
They just want it in a mall. I like movies in malls. There's I like something a mall about movie. Malls. Yeah. When people are stuck in malls, that kind of reminds me of...
Dawn of the Dead. I thought of Dawn of the Dead watching this. I did feel like this...
Yeah, that's my favourite mall movie.
I would say that's my favourite mall movie too.
It's got to be, isn't it? It's got to be.
That and, just scenes of Jake and Josh when they're in the mall.
Jake and Josh. Yeah, we spoke about it in the intro, but malls in American movies, there is something about them, isn't there? There is just something about them.
It's just... I miss a mall. You know, you go to a mall now and it's just... It's weird, isn't it? It's just... It doesn't feel like it's lively. It feels like... For me, when I see a mall, I just see people walking past. It's like a throughway. It's like a little tunnel to the next street. That's all people use the mall for these days. Like, nobody shops in the mall.
But the mall used to be a cool place to be. You know, it used to be the cool place to hang out with all the teenagers. Hang
teenagers,
you know?
Still hang out there, but like, down on their luck.
They're not cool, they're are
not.
They?
Yeah, but no teenagers are cool.
Teenagers in the 80s were cool.
They probably weren't. When you're a teenager, teenagers are cool. But when you're not a teenager, teenagers are just weird and annoying and ugly looking.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they're weirdos. They're definitely weirdos. They're trying to... Because you look at them with wise eyes when you're older, because you look at me going, you don't even know who you are yet.
You don't know who you are.
You don't know what you're
doing.
I've
been through things, man. You're 14. Your mum still picks out your socks. What are you on about?
Yeah. What are you fucking saying? You ain't nothing. Wait till you start paying council tax, you bastards. Yeah. Winorski, a fascinating fella. Let's just say that much. And, I stumbled on him purely by chance as well, watching a random movie on a Spanish channel. And weirdly, that also had a robot blowing someone's head off. Well, I mean, it was kind of like a knife. It shot like a blade at it and it sliced the guy's head off. And then in this, a robot explodes a woman's head. So, yeah. Let's talk about Susie Slater.
Okay.
Where does she go? Susie Slater. She seemed to... I think a lot of people thought that she was going to be the next It Girl, you know? You know who she is? She's the one who got her head exploded.
All right, yeah.
She's the one who got her head exploded. I think people thought she was going to go on to big things, but she just kind of vanished from... she had a few minor roles. She's obviously best known for the chopping mall. And then she just stopped in... I think when did she stop? 1984 was the last thing she did, which is called Mind Twister. and then she just disappeared.
Well, I think obviously the big star out of this one, there was the biggest is probably Barbara Crampton, who is obviously one of the scream queens. She had a great career. She did Reanimator, From Beyond. She's still doing movies now, still strong, still getting them out there.
And it is
strange, isn't it? Because there's a lot of actors in horror movies. Sometimes, like, you get a Tom Hanks, you get a George Clooney, or Jason Alexander, where they become big stars. And sometimes
Jennifer Aniston.
They star in some weird movies that you think, you know. And when you watch Jennifer Aniston in Leprechaun, you don't look at it and go, she's going to be an A-lister. Because she's not good in that movie. But she's got nothing to work with. It's a poor script. And same with this. It's a poor script. You can't exactly say it's chewing scenery. And when they do, they're overacting. But it is always interesting to see these young actors who want to make it and never do. And I don't know if they fall out of love with it. You know, when you look at her, she only had like 13 credits as Susie Slater. So did she just get fed up of being given crap roles, or did she have a bad agent, or is it a sort of mixture of two things or a load of things?
It's funny when they kind of just disappear for just out of existence. Like with her, it's a bit odd because they don't even know what her age is. Her age isn't listed. It just says that she's born on June 13th. So how old is Susie Slater? There's no one knows. No one knows where she is. She's disappeared and started a new life.
Maybe she has a better life. Who knows? She might be doing fantastic stuff.
Oh, yeah. 100%. You don't know. You just don't know, do you? But it is intriguing. I'm always intrigued. When I see like movies like this and I'm like, who is this person? What did they go on and do? Sometimes you're surprised and you're like, oh, my God, they went on and did that.
And sometimes we interview them.
Sometimes we interview them. Sometimes we track them down by emailing their work. That's it.
So watch out, Susan Slater, because you might be next.
You could be next. Nah, that'd be impossible. I think that'd be absolutely impossible. Unless by chance someone who knows her is listening and wants to drop us an email. Email details in the app bit. Or on our Twitter. But yeah, no, this is I love these sort of movies. This actually surprised me how much I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was just going to be crap. To be honest, it was just a placeholder so we could talk about Jim Minorski, and I ended up enjoying this movie. And I think this movie is also a prime example of how powerful promotion is, because when it originally was released as Killbots, and the poster was just one of the robots. It bombed. No one rented it. No one cared.
Sounds like a Transformer enemy, doesn't it?
But then they redid it, and I tell you what, it looks good. This is a movie that if at the time, and it was all down to that, wasn't it? Because with like Blockbusters and rental stores, like that was where all the business sort of came from at this sort of time, wasn't it? For these sort of movies, was people going to the video store and picking out something that stood out to them. And you look at this and it says, where shopping costs you an arm and a leg.
Oh.
And then it obviously has that robot arm with the head in the bag, and it's the chopping mall tech. This looks good. I would have picked this up.
It's eye candy, isn't it? It is just candy for the eyes. The best thing about this movie is the artwork. But then again, a lot of horror movies can say it. Some of the best artwork you see is in a horror movie. And I like this movie. Like I said, I'm always less critical of horror movies. I kind of like them to be kind of bad sometimes. I don't mind them being cheesy. Don't mind them being predictable, as long as I can stand it. Like I said, I think this movie did lose a little bit of power at the end. It did feel like the last half an hour of it was a little bit of a chore, but I still liked it.
Yeah. I still liked it. Yeah. But back to the cover. I kind of miss those days where you'd go to Blockbusters and you'd pick out a movie to watch, and you'd be based purely on the cover. I miss those days. Streaming doesn't hit the same. Because I think it's because you have the choice to just back out of it.
Yeah.
You can put something on and be like, eh, nah, I'm not feeling this one. You're kind of almost more picky with streaming.
Yeah.
Then you know, when you go to this, you kind of take a chance and you've rented it, it's too late. You put it in, you watch the whole fucking thing.
I do find it. I find myself, like, you look on, I don't know how many titles are on Netflix. Let's say it's 200, right? You've got so much choice, but you still can't find anything to watch.
Why is that? There's definitely something psychological about it, because it wasn't like that back in the day. I used to go to Blockbusters and I'd have like 6 DVDs in my hand and I'd be like, well, I can only have one. And then I'd be whittling it down.
But actually, it used to just be, for me, it used to just be like 2, and then it'd be like 1. I'd know. And I know which one it was anyway, but it is the idea that, like you said, you have to make the choice, so you have to make the right choice. But sometimes it was literally just who was on the cover, or had I known it, it was like instantaneously, I wanted this. Whereas now, you look at the trailer, like you look at that little 30-second not for probably 10-second clip on Netflix, and you kind of get a feel for it. Is it any good? Will I like it? And then you think, I'll put it in the list. I'll put it in my list. And then that list grows and grows and grows. You realize that you never really look at your list. You just look at other things. You wonder why you put it in the list.
Do you think that has had an effect on cult movies? We don't have a lot more. We don't really have as many cult movies as we did back in the day. Maybe that affects.
No, because there are some cult movies. There's a cult movie on Shudder that I'm going to try and see, which is Psycho Gorman. I might watch it tonight, which I've heard so much stuff. So much stuff about, and I do think there is cult movies. I think if anything, they'll be even stronger with streaming. I think that's the only good, because cult movies are never found at the cinema. They're found through VHS. They're found through watching it on TV. So for me, the cult movie is in a good place at the moment. Like, if anything, the more accessible a movie is on the streaming site, the more it will have a cult. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is options, too many options. And then you go and watch an episode of Seinfeld. You can look for a movie and then you watch Seinfeld.
You resort back to your comforts. I'm the type of person who, when I sit down with my food, I have to have something to watch. I can't just sit there. I have to have it ready and be like, fucking hell, I have to watch
it. It has
this
to be the right thing, though. I don't want to watch anything gory.
It has
gory.
To be the right thing.
I can't watch something gory while I'm
eating. It has to be the right thing.
Especially like if I'm eating something that's liquidy, like macaroni. I don't want to watch anything gory.
Macaroni. Your macaroni shouldn't be liquidy. Should be nice and thick.
Gooey then.
Like
gooey.
Gooey. Let's go gooey. Gooey. That's one of those things. But we'll place this. Good, bad, or what the fuck?
That's good.
I agree. I recommend from us. And we'll move on to what we're watching next week. Episode 70 is next week, and it's your turn.
Back to me.
To pick. Back to you.
We're going to Disney Plus on this one.
Ooh.
And as soon as I saw it on there, I had the idea that this is something that I would really like to fully go into, not for just the movie I'm going to pick, but the TV show that came after it. And if you want to watch a couple of episodes of the TV show afterwards, go ahead. I'm going for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the original 1992 movie, it starred Kirsty Swanson, who's a flighty teenage Buffy Summers who learns that she's a generation's designed battler of vampires. This movie,
I don't know if I
flopped.
Ever saw this?
This movie flopped. It was a bad movie. It was written by Joss Whedon, but Joss Whedon was such a believer in his story that he continued with it, and he made a big, in my opinion, and you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is one of my favorite TV shows. It's up there, my top 5 best TV shows ever. And I'd like to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'd like to talk about the movie. I'd like to briefly touch onto the TV show and just talk all things Buffy. And maybe the question is, the people that are in the Buffy movie, would they have been good in the Buffy TV show? That was the direction they went. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't know, have you ever seen it?
This is what I was trying to think. I can't, it looks so familiar, but I can't remember if
it
I have seen it.
It's very different. I've obviously from the seen TV the TV show. Show. It's very different.
It looks a lot more lighthearted.
It's a lot more 80s, even though it's set in the 90s, in the May 1992, but it feels like it could have easily slipped into the 80s. Yeah, this is on Disney Plus. Also, Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV show is on Disney Plus. On Star, I should say. It's on Star. If you have Star, you've got it. But if you've got Disney Plus and you've got Star subscription on your Disney Plus, you can find Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, and the TV show.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure I have watched it. It does look familiar, though. Why does it look so familiar?
Maybe you have watched it.
No, I don't think. Maybe I have watched it. Christy Swanson. I was trying to think what I know her from. Isn't it?
She was in Adam Sandler movie.
Big Daddy. Yeah, that's what I recognize her from instantly.
She likes grandpa balls. Remember?
She does. Old balls.
I thought you were having sex with my girlfriend. I am.
Oh yeah.
You remind me of my grandson.
Yeah, that is good. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Disney Plus. Okay, next week, I guess that's what we'll be watching.
Good.
And we'll catch you then.
Bye bye.
Goodbye.